Welcome to episode 42 of the Serious About Security podcast for June 5th, 2013, brought to you by the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or SIRIUS, at Purdue University. I'm Preston Wiley, and I'm joined today by Keith Watson, who is back after a week of vacation, and Mike Hill. And I believe I have the first article this week. Which is about researchers being able to infect iOS devices with malware via a malicious charger. A group of three researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology are going to be presenting their research at the upcoming Black Hat Security Conference toward the end of July. And basically, what they've done is they've been able to make a USB thing that you plug into the wall and has a USB port on it using a what they call using a board from a Beagle board sold by Texas Instruments. And basically what it does is you plug it in, you plug your iPhone into it, and it is able to charge your iPhone and at the same time install malware on your phone via USB. So at the moment, a Beagle board wouldn't fit into those small charger things that Apple provides, but it would be able to fit into a docking station or some sort of device like that. So I thought this was interesting. I don't think Apple has commented yet about this exploit. I mean, I'm sure they know what it is, but they haven't commented, or I believe they haven't fixed it yet either. So we'll know more details at toward the end of July. But I thought this was interesting because this is a software exploit, but it's a hardware module that is used to exploit the software. It's not a piece of software that you get and do your thing. It's a hardware-based exploit for the iPhone. And I just wanted to know what you two thought of this.
Well, again, this is not totally surprising. When you have physical access to a device, there are things you can do to it that normally you wouldn't be able to do if it were just on a network. And the fact that they discovered a vulnerability and then implemented it through a hacker tool, and I say hacker not in the sense of somebody who breaks systems, but somebody who experiments with electronics, for example, uses a Beagle board, which for those that are not familiar with that, it's kind of like an Arduino, which is a hobbyist electronic device. It's very configurable, so you can build interesting projects and then write software for it. If you could use this device to compromise an iPhone, then that's interesting in and of itself. And the one application where I see this would be very useful is when you're at an airport and you see one of those kiosks that have charging capabilities for, they're like quick chargers for phones. And they have all sorts of different connectors for them. And most of the time they have one for iOS devices too. So that you could put in a kiosk and basically, you know, hack a bunch of phones that people want to charge while they're at the airport. It's, you know, it's a two-for-one sort of deal. So I think that'd be a good use for it.
So sounds like everyone's going to be buying up the Apple chargers and keeping them safely stored away and not using variations of them. I think what's interesting is this proof of concept, as it is right now, is still a bit bigger than the typical USB charger for an Apple device. However, I think it wouldn't be a far stretch for them to develop something that looks very much like the ones that Apple produces. It doesn't sound like they currently have that capability yet. So I guess for now, to be safe, don't plug your phone into something you don't trust. So those devices, as you mentioned, Keith, at airports, or when you have a friend that says, hey, I have a USB charger, but it's not for an iPhone or an iPad, be like, nah, I'm just gonna wait till I can get my charger and use that instead. But yeah, I think it's a good reminder that physical access to the device really gives people a great opportunity to do bad things. I mean, you know, so we just need to be aware of where we're plugging in for power as well, because that's another source of potential malware.
Right, and unfortunately, on the iOS devices, you're combining power and communications through one port. But that's also true of Android phones too. So I'm certain there's probably some exploits that could probably be used against Android devices as well. So I wouldn't want to say this is an Apple-only problem. Certainly, they're reporting on what they found for iOS, but there are similar vectors that could be used in Android as well.
Well, and one comment about the size is the BeagleBoard is meant to be a hobbyist board, and it can do a lot of things. And as such, it has a lot of electronics to it. And if you have a specific purpose in mind for an electronic device, you can make it significantly smaller than what the BeagleBoard is. So if you wanted to make little tiny USB ports that were the same size as Apple ones with this specific concept in mind, I have no doubt that you could do it. So while it is big now, once the electronics diagram comes out for it, I'm sure it could be reduced to a fraction of the size that it is now.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see a big proliferation of such things if there's an easy fix that Apple could push out too. So it's an interesting exploit. The practicality of it is still questionable yet, let's say.
Well, and it again highlights why security researchers are important, the fact that they discovered this, the fact that Apple now has to patch it, and the bad guys didn't necessarily get to exploit it for a significant amount of time, I think, is a good thing. And I'm happy they found it, and I'm happy it was reported, and I'm interested to see the exploit.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what exactly it takes advantage of.
Yeah, and this might be a commercial opportunity for Apple, because I know there's a lot of knockoffs for cables and chargers that are much, much cheaper than the prices Apple charges. And in a story like this coming out, people might be like, you know what, I'm going to pay $30 for that cable instead of 20 cents and go with them maybe. This might actually drive up a little more business for them. Just the thought that a different type of charger could potentially damage your iOS device. But, you know, the other thing I was curious about in this article, and I'm assuming this wouldn't matter, but it doesn't really describe, you know, if the user has passcode locks enabled on their device and everything. I'm assuming, just reading through the details, that it's more or less getting you root access into the device. So there's really nothing that an end user could do to kind of help protect them from this if they were to encounter this in the wild.
Yeah, I'm guessing that you're correct, but the article I don't think specifically mentions that. So we don't know. I think we'll find out toward the end of July when they present this at Black Hat. So anyway, we're done with that one, so we'll go on to Keith's article.
So this article is related to a blog post on the Google Online Security blog by Chris Evans and Drew Hintz, who are security engineers at Google. And basically, they have made a slight change to their recommended disclosure timeline, specifically for zero-day export exploits, or any critical vulnerability that is actively being exploited. And they want to shrink that from their current recommendation of 60 days down to 7 days. And basically their findings are that if you have an actively exploited zero-day exploit or a zero-day vulnerability that is being exploited, it's very critical that information be published, so people, if there's not a way of, you know, making a correction, that there's at least information out there which may help find a workaround, or you may just stop using a particular software or service if you know that there's a particular vulnerability out there. And part of this is for software vendors to do a better job in patching these quickly, And it's also something that Google themselves are also trying to follow as well. So that was their blog post, and basically that, you know, their standing recommendation is, you know, fix your vulnerabilities within 60 days. But if it's a critical one that's being actively exploited, you should do it within 7. Okay. Now, there's been some pushback from that, and we've linked to those articles. And basically, the argument goes that, well, that's all fine and good for vendors that publish most of their software through a web service, such as Google, which, you know, most of their stuff comes that way. But that makes less sense for a majority of software vendors who actually have software updates to push out to customers who may have that software installed on their end systems. There's a question of being able to test that software to make sure that the exploit is closed, but also to make sure that they haven't introduced any problems into the software by making the correction. And there's just this act of trying to get large enterprises to update their software within a specific time frame. And so while it's a good goal, I guess, it is less likely to happen in reality. And I can see it both ways. Certainly, having worked at a large software vendor for a while, I'm somewhat familiar with the amount of effort it takes to push out updates and patches. Although, even at the company that I did work with, they eventually did shrink that time frame by specifically having a process to deal with critical vulnerabilities and patches. So it is possible for even the large guys to have an accelerated process, which is still provides good software quality assurances, but yet puts out a patch or an update in the hands of customers fairly quickly. So I think it is possible to do both. Now, the timeline, we could argue over whether 7 is too short and 14 is just right and 32 is too long. You know, those sorts of arguments, I'm sure, will take place. But I think that it's a good idea to maybe push the industry in the right direction, and 7 days might be a good goal for people to shoot for.
Well, yeah, and one of the things I liked that they said in the article was that they realize not everyone's going to be able to push out an update in 7 days. But what I really like is it says they should be able to push out some information within a 7-day window. So even if you can't put a patch out, you could say, you know, disable this service, or here's some kind of mitigation while we work on creating the patch. And I think that's good advice. I think 7 days is a good window for that, because that basically just gives you a week of, I mean, a week of 0 days can still do a lot of damage, but at least at the end of that week, you know, something could be made available from the vendor that says, here's how we think you can mitigate it. And even say, you know what, or just say something. Say, we're really looking at this, and it's hard, and we don't know yet how to stop it, but as soon as we know, we're going to let you know. We are taking this serious.
Yep, that's good. Well, good point.
I have one comment to make. The suggestion was to a 7-day time period for exploits that are being actively exploited, not exploits that were necessarily found and are being exploited, but exploits that are being exploited by the bad guys at the moment. And I think that's a big distinction between I find a vulnerability and I'm not a bad guy, and that doesn't necessarily mean 7 days from that. There's an exploit out there. It's being actively exploited, and that gives me 7 days after that active exploitation to release information. And I think that is reasonable. That means the bad guys know about it and they're using it. Now, of course, if you release information about it, then probably more bad guys are going to be using it. But we already know the bad guys are using it, so it seems reasonable to release information once you know that it's in the hands of the bad guys.
Right. That is a good distinction. You know, is it how do you define actively exploited? Is there a number you put on it, or is it just that somebody used it somewhere? And a lot of the points they were making is that a lot of political activists might be the ones targeted first with some of the exploits they've seen. And so then the question becomes, is that the commercial customer that these vendors are more concerned about, or whether they're more concerned about large enterprises being actively exploited too?
Well, and I think this blog post is 4 paragraphs. So it's not, I mean, it's not, it doesn't go into great detail on any single point, but I mean, this is, I mean, it's an interesting read, and a lot, and I think it has generated a lot of, I mean, it's generated way more than 4 paragraphs worth of comments over what they said. In fact, it's got 8 comments on it, on the blog post itself, but then there's several, I mean, you've posted at least 3 articles talking about it. So I think Google, and I think we talked about another Google thing a while back, but I think a lot of the times these are posted to generate feedback, and I mean, it's a blog, so and I think it's a good thing to have an active discussion on, is what we're doing right now working, or should we change and do something else?
Right. And there's also, you know, Google is fairly active in trying to get people to report exploits that they've discovered in some of their products, specifically like the Google Chrome browser being a good example of that. And so they may be trying to push the industry through a variety of ways. And just, you're right, a short little blog post on their blog is really not a significant change in policy, let's say, but it seems to me that they're going to back a lot of their employees who do release information, you know, within that 7-day window. What's interesting is if you go and you look at some of the Microsoft reporting for some of their corrections, you'll notice there that Google's name shows up quite a bit sometimes in their reporting. And I don't know if that's Google engineers inside the company discovering Microsoft exploits. I'm not sure how that works. I have seen Google's name on a couple exploits reported on Firefox, for example. So the question is, is this something they're actively doing in the company, is actually looking for vulnerabilities within their competitors, or are they just being nice? I'm not sure. There's a little question of motivation there, too.
I think it's a good effort. I like that they're taking this stance, and I think they're already kind of putting some pressure on others. Based on some of the feedback I read on some of those articles, was you've already got some people criticizing it, saying, well, a company like Google can respond in 12 hours, but we need much more time. And Google never said they would respond in 12 hours, and I find that kind of funny. I don't think anyone expects 12 hours. I mean, when you put a patch in place, I think it usually will take more than 12 hours. We want you to test it and make sure it works well in your environment. But I think what Google's saying is you can't, when something's being actively exploited, you can't have these big voids of time that go past without communicating to the public, saying, we are at least looking into this, or here's some workarounds, or stop using our product till we fix it. I mean, that's the worst, that's the last thing a company wants to say. But from a security standpoint, sometimes that's what you got to say if you can't fix it and it's actively being exploited. Say, just stop using it. We will get something out there and when we can. But I don't think anyone will say that, but that would be, you know, let the public know what's happening.
Well, Microsoft is fairly decent at acknowledging things. I mean, releasing patches is another thing, but I think Apple is notorious for not commenting or saying anything at all until they have a solution in place, which sometimes takes quite a long time, and there's other vendors as well. So I don't think that I don't think this will result in a change in vendors that aren't good at doing things. There's some that just say, well, we'll do it when we do it, and there's some that are pretty quick about doing it, and I don't think this will change their minds or anything like that. So I'm not sure. I think it's good to have discussions about it, but I'm not sure if it'll actually result in any changes, other than maybe people getting information about vulnerabilities that exist quicker.
I'm not sure I agree with you there. I think that there may be some change. I hope there's change. If they follow through and actually go and start accepting responsibility for their own vulnerabilities that are being actively exploited and providing information quickly, as well as reporting to other vendors with the same policy, I think that will be motivation for change. It won't be change that everybody's going to like, but I think it's going to happen.
Well, I hope there's a change too. I'm not saying I don't hope there is, but I'm just guessing that the people who don't play nice will continue not to play nice. I think that's essentially that's not going to change their minds.
Right. Well, I think organizations that take a stronger stance on this and really try to address it, I think they're going to be the winners in the future. I think the ones that show that they care about the end users, and when there's a problem in their product, they don't try to cover up or hide or pretend it didn't happen. They address it and they communicate and they say, we're aware of it and we're fixing it. And they demonstrate that. And I know, other companies, that are not technology companies, but, things like, I think Tylenol went through a thing in the 80s where they had to pull Tylenol off the shelves. They didn't know what the problem was. They didn't know exactly what was affected, but they just came right out and they pulled them off the shelves. And they said, you know what, we're going to take care of this. And they did. And they didn't really lose consumers because consumers walked away feeling like they were taken care of. And I think that's what Google's trying to start here, is saying, hey, we have a responsibility to the end users. When we're aware of something and it's being actively exploited, we should let people know we're trying to fix it. And we're going, if we can't fix it in 7 days, we say after 7 days, we are at least trying to. And here's some things you can do to avoid any damage. Or here's some, you shouldn't be using this app because it's vulnerable and we haven't been able to patch it yet.
Yep.
All right, and with that, we'll wrap things up. Thank you to Keith Watson and Mike Hill. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.